Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction tribe? I'm super excited where we've been having tons of connections around Digital Built Week and the people that have made that happen and putting a lot of work around that. And today we get to have a pleasure of talking with Marcelo Scambolari, who is the Director of Advanced Design and Technology at AG&E. And I'm super excited to dive into Dynamo and Grasshopper for Revit. And we've talked a lot about the 800-pound gorilla of Autodesk to Revit and then these different connections. And this guy literally has wrote the book. In fact, it's on Amazon, Dynamo and Grasshopper for Revit, the cheat sheet reference manual. And working day-to-day with AG&E has tons of perspectives. And from my perspective, this is our first episode where we're honored to be the affiliated with Digital Built Week in 2023 in Dallas. This is our third time being part of this event. And as a lifelong learner focusing on these different builder partnerships, we've spent the last 3 years really beginning with the end in mind with our friends at Digital Built Week, who are, we've taken these deep dives into the A of the AECO of really trying to understand the people that make architecture work. And I've told many stories of how I've been going down this journey and the people that have been putting this all together. So we're super excited. And the main message is that we're going to talk about the man who wrote the manual on Dynamo and Grasshopper. And we've been all trying to figure out the right way to integrate ChatGPT and straddling the augmented and the reality and all the different moving parts. So I just went in and asked, you know, what is Dynamo and Grasshopper from ChatGPT? And this was the answer that we got to kind of tee this up and see if Marcelo agrees with this or if it's totally off base. So Dynamo and Grasshoppers are both visual programming platforms used for architectural and engineering design. And I think engineering is a key thing of the passing the baton, and that's what we love talking about. Dynamo is a visual programming language that is used to create scripts and automation workflows for building informational modeling, or BIM, that we've been talking a ton about. Software such as Autodesk Revit. Dynamo allows users to create custom tools and automate repetitive tasks in their design process. It uses a graphical interface where users can drag and drop pre-built nodes to create workflows, which make it accessible to users who may not have a programming background. Grasshopper, on the other hand, is a visual programming language and graphical algorithm editor for the 3D modeling software Rhinoceros. It allows users to create complex parametric designs by creating algorithms and connecting them with visual elements such as sliders, buttons, and other interface elements. Grasshopper enables designers to experiment with different design variations by adjusting input parameters, which can save time and increase design options. Both Dynamo and Grasshopper provide designers with the powerful set of tools to create and automate design processes, and they are widely used in architecture and engineering fields. So how does this benefit us? We're going to talk about how builders should know about these histories and how we can use these tools to really connect the field to the office and really make these designs come to life. And to do that, I'm super excited to hear Marcelo's story. So let's lock and load and have as much fun as possible and learn about Dynamo and Grasshopper from the guy who's been living this for a while now. Marcelo, what's your favorite beverage?
Hey, hi, Devin. How are you doing? My favorite beverage. I actually don't have a favorite beverage. I kind of jump all over the place. My tastes vary just kind of depending on my mood. that's what I have to say. I'd like to stay really hydrated. So it tends not to be anything alcoholic. It tends to be like a vitamin water or something like that.
Awesome. What about the favorite place you've traveled?
Favorite place I've ever traveled was Barcelona. Yeah, and I got to see a lot of buildings done by Calatrava as well as Sagrada Familia. It was just breathtaking when I saw it.
Give us one story from that.
Well, I am a structural engineer by training, and so I quite honestly thought I saw a lot in my lifetime because I've been doing this for over 25 years now. And when I went to Sagrada Familia, which has been under construction for the last, and I'm sure we have some aficionados on that topic, over 100 years now, it's been under construction 100 years. It took my breath away with how elaborate it was, how large it was, the scale, and this the structure that went into support it. It blew my mind. I learned actually a lot. I ended up just sitting in the middle of one of the big open rooms, and I looked up just for hours, and I was so happy. It was breathtaking, and it changed me professionally.
Outstanding. Thanks for sharing that. What do you like to do outside of construction, or your favorite hobby or interest?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I got a few. Of course, spending time with the family. I love doing that. Traveling. One thing I've done over the last, let's see, five, I used to play soccer for 30 years, but I retired because I didn't want to get injured anymore. I really, really missed it. And so it was a little hard for me. I kind of went through these stages of grief, actually. And my wife was like, well, why don't you just be the referee? And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. So I ended up taking referee classes, and now I'm a soccer referee, and that's what I do in my spare time. I absolutely love it. I'll end up refereeing 60 to 100 games a year.
Awesome. Well, good on you. Good for doing that, keeping your passion alive.
Yeah.
Just in a little bit different. That's what we're always talking about, these handoffs, and, you know, days can be long sometimes, but the years go short. What is your story that led you to being the Director of Advanced Design and Technology at AG&E?
At AG&E specifically, I used to work with a gentleman who works there now. And we used to work in Los Angeles together. And he was at this firm, and they needed someone to direct some of their new advancements in technology. He called me up, and it was just the perfect fit for me. So I've been there. It's a relatively new thing. I've been there about 11 months.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, what is your background of your career before that?
Like I mentioned, I am a structural engineer. I'm licensed in three states. I actually started out as just a design engineer in Los Angeles, and the first project I ever worked on, I think this is the Walt Disney Concert Hall. I was kind of thrown into it, and it actually shaped who I am today. Back then, this was 1997, 1998. We could not convey all that geometry in 2D plans and elevations. So we had to model everything in three dimensions, which also became the contract documents, which then the contractor used, as well as the fabricators to procure the steel, the structure, as well as erect it in place. And at the same time, I had to learn how to model everything in three dimensions at the same time. And so that's just kind of what I've been doing ever since.
That's absolutely fascinating. Like, talk about thrown into it in 97, 98. And we're now going to talk about it in 2023, where a lot of people probably still don't know what Dynamo and Grasshopper is. That, am I understanding right? That's what you had to learn, and you used those tools all the way back then? Or was this pre-Dynamo and Grasshopper?
I'm sure we have some AEC technology scholars out there who correct me on this, but at the time, all that stuff was in its extreme infancy. So we didn't use any of those kind of what we call computational design tools. We used a more rudimentary form of what we call, you mentioned earlier, BIM, building information modeling. The software we used at the time was CATIA. The shapes were so complex, we had to use a software they use in the airline industry called CATIA to design Boeing jets, things like that.
Got it.
And we were able to infuse a bit of information intelligence into the entities that we were modeling. So they weren't just surfaces, lines, arcs, solids, points. They actually did have some data behind them so that it could be used downstream. And then that in a sense was a very early form of BIM. But even then, trying to think of Professor Eastman, I don't think he even coined the term yet, BIM, at that point. But that's what we had to do. We were kind of just thrown into it. Yeah, and I would meet with the architect. I would go to their office. We'd work together collaboratively on this. We would work with the steel fabricator directly so that this could all be together. And then also with the building department as well, County of LA, to make sure that this kind of all came together in this new kind of digital environment that no one really had a lot of experience working in. but we were forced to do it because we, like I said, we realized it just couldn't convey all this geometry in our classic plans and elevations.
Yeah, that makes me think of a recent podcast where we did around the architect and the builder around Meow Wolf, and they talked about working with Disney and all the people about how to get that in the middle of Denver and this whole crazy thing. Can you tell us about, I raised my hand and say, I don't know much about Disney Hall. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Disney Hall project and what that entails?
The name could be a little misleading. It is not affiliated really in any sense with Disney's company or theme park. They do own the rights to put their name on the building. It is a concert hall. It's called Disney Concert Hall. It's in downtown Los Angeles. It sits up on Bunker Hill in the Art District. It is a large, many thousand seat theater, which is the home to the LA Philharmonic. So it is, in a sense, a large interior concert hall. There's a few kind of ancillary buildings, as well as one internal hall as well within it. And the design originally was like a wedding cake, just kind of this stepped simple structure. But then the Northridge earthquake happened, and a lot of the structural systems that were designed into it, the county didn't really trust it anymore, but all the steel was already fabricated and sitting in warehouses in Long Beach. Wow. So what was trusted at the time was brace frames. So we had to do the task of reusing all of the steel that was originally designed for moment frames for brace frames, which made it a bit of a challenge. And not only that, but the geometry then, the architect did change architects from Dvorsky, which is now Canon Design, if I'm getting my architecture history right, then to Frank Gehry or Gehry Partners. And then once they had it, they dramatically changed the shape of what it is now, which is a very a non-rectilinear curve.
I was going to say, Gehry, that would definitely, if they were going to take it on, it would change the shape for sure, which would yield more of that, right? Well,
yeah,
thanks for that.
You're welcome.
That tee up. I really appreciate kind of getting the blast from the past. And on the intro, I read what ChatGPT has said about Dynamo and Grasshopper. But for our audience of builders and its affiliates, from your perspective, what would you say? What is Dynamo?
What is Dynamo? You know that ChatGPT was not wrong. I have to say that everything it said was correct technically. I think I would put it in my own words and probably simplify it quite a bit. Dynamo is a visual programming language, and so it is not a text-based language. It is prepackaged and embedded within the Revit software, at least now it is. But what it does is it has the ability to read and write to external databases. Read and write. So the main one is Revit. It also makes its own parametric geometry. So those are the two things it does, which really allows it to do a lot of amazing stuff. Because it's a visual programming language, it doesn't require text coding. So if you wanted to, the reason it grew like wildfire, actually, in the industry, it started, I'm not exactly sure, but early 2013 is when I started to see it creep into the industry. And the reason it grew like wildfire was that it was able to access data within the Revit database that the only way you were able to do that before was through text coding. So with just being able to put down some what we call visual programming as nodes, or boxes, I like to call them, with some boxes and wiring them together, you don't need a text coding background. Then you're able to start to pull out data. You could then write it to other databases like Excel. You can get data out. You can also change data within Revit if you want to be able to quickly automate something, maybe change your sheet numbers, all 300 sheets or whatever, instantly instead of having you manually do it. So that's why it became extremely popular. It was allowed you to automate. It is under this umbrella of what we call computational design, because it does allow you to automate your designs as well as make them efficient.
What a great perspective of like simplifying of the KISS model, right? Of like figuring out, like, think about your perspective of the project before you had that. If today you started that project over with that tool, I think it'd be a different thing. And that's, I think, where we talk about right now. I think there's a lot of synergy around, you know, construction tech is like so much of it that's not being used. And I agree with a lot of that, but you think about how far it has come. What about on the other perspective, Grasshopper?
Grasshopper. Okay. Grasshopper is also a visual programming language. It is packaged up with Rhinoceros, or Rhino for short, which is a 3D modeling program. So Grasshopper also can read and write to external databases, but the main one is Rhinoceros. It also makes its own parametric geometry. It is a bit more, I'm going to put in quotes, customizable, flexible, and just more parametric in nature, just because of the culture that surrounds it and when it's usually used is for working with trying to make designs parametric and be able to quickly change geometry that then manifests itself within Rhino, because Rhino is a 3D modeling environment. Rhino is not a, what I'm putting in quotes, a documentation software. So a lot of the times when Grasshopper is used, it has very similar function to Grasshopper, but it's used in those early stages for automating the design, how something might look, being flexible with making, changing on those parameters. And then Dynamo is, could do similar things, but because of the nature of Revit and it being also a documentation software, it also does a lot of the Dynamo does a lot of the work around automating for documentation. They are similar, and there are kind of these two schools of thought. There is, if you look at two circles and what they do kind of overlap in the middle, and it is pretty big. But it is, for that overlap, you can have really interesting conversations between Grasshopper and Dynamo and Grasshopper and Dynamo users. Sometimes it's almost like the PC and the Mac conversations. You know, it just kind of depends on what you want to do. But they are similar. In fact, the book I wrote focuses on those circles where they actually overlap. And in the book, on the left side, it actually shows you how to do it in Grasshopper. And then on the right side, it shows you how to do the same thing in Dynamo.
Got it. And that's really helpful to understand these perspectives, to say, if I'm hearing you right, kind of the PC, Mac, or like Google or Office 365 or Zoom or Teams and these different things, you have to have a few different quote unquote competing products, but they have to play together for these people. It sounds like if you're big into Dynamo, you're probably using Grasshopper and vice versa for different things where they come together. And if I heard you right, Dynamo is really the inside of the Revit tool more than Grasshopper. Am I understanding that right?
That's right. And then Grasshopper is more of the inside the Rhino tool than Dynamo. And they certainly do things on their own. Some can do some things and some can do another. But I really like to look at this as, you know, the right tool for the right job is really the way to look at these, as opposed to them trying to compete with each other. And then how comfortable an individual is on using one versus the other. You know, I've been doing this so long, you know, I don't ever want to force anyone into convincing them that one software is better than another. You know, if someone is more efficient at doing it a certain way, then why not let them do it a certain way?
Well said. And I guess from the basic level of, now we've at least heard the names.
Uh-huh.
What are the tools used for? Because you say they're different tools, and most people know what a hammer and a nail is, but what is a Grasshopper and a Dynamo? What are these tools used for?
Okay. So if you just look up, let's just kind of talk, there's always fringe outlier examples, but let's just talk about kind of a traditional sense on how they're used.
Okay.
Grasshopper is traditionally used within conjunction with Rhinoceros, and it is mostly used for creating parametric geometry and being able to be create like the ChatGPT said, algorithms, scenarios such that you're able to change geometry on the fly, be able to work out scenarios, being able to make things, I guess parametric is probably the right word to use. You build a box, let's just make it really simple. You build a box, you don't have to build another one if you want to change its width. Grasshopper, you're allowed to put in sliders, and you can change the width just by a simple slider as a whole. Powers to remodeling the whole cube from scratch. That just would be one example. But in there, it becomes extremely powerful because you're allowed to make things extremely flexible, because we understand during design process, especially early design process, it's an iterative process. Things change, owner requests, walls get taller or shorter, civil information comes in. Well, that's not really the height. Well, do you want to remodel everything from scratch, or can you set up a scenario by using Grasshopper such that when things change, you don't need to remodel your project from scratch? It will automatically flex and move based on the parameters that you set in there when changes need to happen, when they're either forced or you decide to make a change just because you don't like the way it looks or you want to change your design. So it's becoming, what it does is it actually makes you more efficient at the iterative design process. That's a very good example of how Grasshopper is used. That's probably its main use. Dynamo is very heavily connected with Revit. So if you own Revit, if you own Revit, you actually get Dynamo. If you owned Grasshopper, if you owned Rhinoceros, you actually get Grasshopper. Mm. So if you're a Revit user, you automatically get Dynamo. It's actually up on the manage menu there. So if you wanted some information, like a classic way to use Dynamo is to be able to read data in and out of Revit. So maybe you wanted to know how many structural beams are in your project, or you wanted to know the surface area of all your structural beams to do maybe fireproofing calculations. Well, you could set up Dynamo, and because it has such a direct link with Revit, you can pull out all the surface areas, and you wouldn't have to run lists, and you wouldn't have to calculate things by hand, taking surface surface perimeters and lengths to do all that. You could set this up, and Dynamo could do it automatically. Dynamo is also parametric, so if your 3D Revit model were to change, then Dynamo's values would automatically update. So you can kind of think about it being a good marriage with Revit. And then it also does a lot of automation as well. Like I mentioned, you want to be able to put a bunch of dimensions on a project in Revit, or you want to be able to change sheet numbers, or you want to change the length of your columns, etc. Dynamo is very helpful for doing that, and that direct connection with Revit.
Great perspectives. And I appreciate you keep saying it over and over to where they're tied to and how they come together. Great job.
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah, yeah.
What has happened is there has been these two scenarios where a lot of the design, and we're talking about the design side, not the construction right side. We'll get to that. But in the design side, if you're using Rhinoceros as your design tool, then and you're using Grasshopper as your design tool, you tend to kind of work in that, and I'm putting this in quotes, a silo. Yeah. But ultimately, this needs to move downstream and get documented, mm-hmm. get to the building department, get to the contractor. Typically, it's another team or another individual within the office that will then pick that up, I'm putting that in quotes, what the design is, get it into Revit or some other BIM software, and document it and move it downstream. So there has been this gap of what we call interoperability. How do you get your design 3D model into your documentation BIM software? There's a new tool called Rhino inside Revit, which the folks at McNeil, which make the Rhino and Grasshopper software, said we could alleviate that pain from getting it from one to the other. You don't need to remodel it from scratch. We're going to take the entire Rhino software and we're going to stick it within Revit. And that way, when you want to do interoperability, still do all your designs, but now there's a direct link with Revit to get your designs into Revit in a meaningful way. And so that's what the other part of the book is all about, is how do you use, how do you use these modern tools to solve that interoperability issue?
Yeah, that maybe the catch-all word of a plug-in of these different things connecting instead of these silos, having the connections. I really appreciate you giving the interoperability challenges and connectivity, because we have to be able to move these handoffs, or what the heck are we doing it for? If it just,
that's right.
And, you know, Bill Allen with the Evolve Lab, I did a podcast with him where he talked about the data drop chasm. And I think you're really bringing some good perspectives around that as well, of like, how do we orchestrate this network and use these different tools as Art of Construction Master facilitators? What would you say are some of the misunderstandings about these tools?
The big misunderstanding on both these tools is that they're difficult to learn, or they don't apply to your everyday grind. That's the way to put it. Both Grasshopper and Dynamo, early on, a lot of their examples were about, and you even mentioned this in the pre-show, Devin, about, they were for twisting towers and complicated facades and randomizing panels. Well, if you're someone who works in box retail and you're doing those day in and day out, you see those examples and you may think, well, what does these computational tools, Grasshopper, Dynamo, have to do with me if this is only for very complicated projects? That could be further from the truth. Because you're allowed to automate and you're able to make parametric relationships with geometry, it is actually for everybody, because everybody has these issues and everyone could benefit from some type of automation, with swapping that out from originally doing it with just manual tasks day in and day out. That's one. Two is, like I mentioned, these are not difficult tools to learn. So for example, if you wanted to get all the areas, the surface areas of a structural beam out of Revit, maybe you have 10,000 beams in Revit, you want to get all the surface areas, it's going to take you about 4 or 5 nodes to get that down. And you put them in a certain sequence, you wire them together, and now you have an answer. As opposed to having to be able to know C-sharp coding, be able to know how to step into the program and access what we would call the Revit API, which is the underlying programming interface to connect with the database, being able to code this out and be able to push this out to some kind of interface that would be meaningful to someone. So these just give you quick ways in and out of these databases that were unheard of 20 years ago.
So this podcast is for our builders and affiliates to crush it and grow their business. Why should these tools matter to builders, to where my experience, maybe I'm out in left field, but a lot of them say, that's not my silo. I don't need to know about that. Why should I care about Dynamo and Grasshopper? I'm just trying to execute this crappy set of plans.
That is an excellent question. I look at it this way. Even if you were 100% convinced that you would never use these tools within your office, there is still a need to know about them. What has happened, because Grasshopper and Dynamo are such an integral part of the design process, there is a very, very good chance that the design teams have used some type of visual programming tool, computational design tool, to develop the BIM or the 3D models or the design models that eventually get passed off in some form or another to the general contractor, which may then filter down to the subs, et cetera, et cetera. So if you have these overlying pieces of software that contribute to the creation and the automation of this, what we may want to call a digital deliverable, it's extremely important to know how that was created, because if there's information you need from it, et cetera, you would want to know what the design teams were using in order to create that. So I think it's just as important to ask for a 3D model if you were going to do that, as well as a supporting software or what we call scripts. Those are the underlying output of these computational design tools like Grasshopper and Dynamo. to ask for those as well, if they're willing to share it. It can give you a lot of insight on how information was pushed and pulled out. There's even an opportunity to use them as well. And here's the thing, Devin, at the very least, even if you never intended to use them, if you happen to ask the design team what kind of computational design software or visual programming software they used, even the mere mention of that is going to earn you instant street cred with the design team. They're going to know you're speaking our language, you understand the tools we use, and you know, it just makes our team much stronger being able to have these kind of technical conversations together, as opposed to thinking, well, we can't have those types of conversations when we do coordination meetings. It would just be able to get wrapped up in the culture and the nomenclature of actually working together on a project team between design and construction. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, but it's much, much, it's easier to say than to do, right? For builders to say, and I totally agree with you, is you have to put yourself in your partner's shoes. And I think we need to start doing that a lot more in construction. And I raise my hand and say, it's really hard to do that, but boy, when you do it, it's so rewarding because people change and move around. But if you're really going to use BIM, building informational modeling, to actually do what it can really do, which is get all the way to the life cycle of back to maintenance and understand it, you better understand the scripts because things are going to change, right? Just like this is our third year going into Digital Built Week, and it's been fascinating jumping into a room of people that I haven't lived that world, right? I've never personally, I've done a few classes in Revit just to understand it from the overarching perspective, but that's about it, right? And there's some rooms you walk into at things like Digital Built Week, and they're so far in the weeds because somebody has been using Dynamo or Grasshopper for 20 years. That may not be the place for you to go, but that's these different conferences. That's what I love about Digital Built Week and platforms like that. Can you tell us about the history and your involvement with DBEI and Digital Built Week, that we've done many podcasts and collaborations around this to really understand the A and the E to connect to the C?
Absolutely. So my history with Digital Built Week, the name of the conference has changed a few times. When I first attended it, it was called the Revit Technology Conference. It was heavily focused on the Revit software. But in any case, I actually attended the first one in North America. There was one before that, which was in Australia, but I attended the first one in 2011. I was invited because, as I mentioned, some of my history is that 3D modeling. When any new software that comes out, I like to try to test it and push it to its limits. When Revit first came out, I treated it like CATIA in a 3D modeling environment. So I started modeling all these things I possibly could in it. It had nothing to do with buildings. I modeled a cow, an elephant, a piece of telehandler equipment, Davit window washing equipment. You know, I was just trying to experiment and see how far I could push it. Autodesk actually saw that and wanted me to write an article in a magazine. And so I did that. And then one of the committee members from the Built saw that, and this was in 2010, and invited me to give some insight on how to do some of that complex modeling within Revit at the first conference. And so that's what I did. So that was the first time I attended. I've been to every single one since then, including the digital ones that were done during the lockdown. Actually, I spoke at every single one so far as well.
I absolutely commend you for all that work, right? And I like to pause and like thank people that take the time to do all this work, because it's a lot of work, right? Like running this podcast and connecting, and the amount of work people put into so much, you know, given dedicated hours to the craft of all this stuff. And fast forwarding 2010 to doing a document to now 2023. What are you talking about this year at the Digital Build Week?
Ah, good one. Thank you. Yes, we have to thank everyone involved with this, because the point is sharing and making the community and the AEC industry better is really what everyone is involved with in this conference, from speakers to committee members to attendees. And who am I leaving out? Sponsors, et cetera. plus I don't want to forget anyone. So thank
well
you.
Well done. Devin. I think you covered it well.
Okay. All right. Very good. So to this year, I'm actually teaching three classes. I'm teaching a class on the new structural analysis tools within Revit. They got completely revamped. I'm also teaching a class on grasshopper and rhinoceros. And then I'm also teaching another class on Unreal. And it's called That's Unreal Beyond Viz. Make your Revit projects interactive using the Unreal game engine.
So really cool forward-thinking stuff, but also diving in on like real specific stuff. If people are using these tools a lot to be able to collaborate and fast track how to move it forward, if I'm understanding it right. And that's kind of on the lead end of Digital Built Week. You know, there's so many different items and classes to go to, but they do a great job of like unpacking, you know, putting the right people in the right seats.
They do. And they do a good job with tracking it out. I don't know if that's the right term, but grouping them so classes actually complement each other. And with that said, wait, do you have a question for me? I think this is a good segue into what you're going to perhaps bring up next.
Yeah. And on the pre-interview, this next question that I'm really excited about that, you know, really as the visionary casting this thing forward, as we get into our closing questions, tell us about your vision of this beyond visualization and what would this mean for our builders and affiliates in the audience? And from your perspective, how likely is this to happen?
I'll answer the last one first. Extremely likely. Extremely likely. I saw the potential. So this all revolves around using game engine technology in our industry. I saw this back in 2013, a shift. I actually saw two things. One, I saw visual programming and computational design being a big thing and game engine technology being a big thing. We'll talk about what I think is the next big thing. But anyway, so this is all about game engine technology. It's here and it's just going to continue to grow like wildfire. What I mean by beyond visualization is there are tools currently out there that allow good visualization with BIM tools. So if you take Revit, there's a good tool called Twinmotion that allows you to take your Revit 3D model and be able to visualize it in a game engine. And that's called Twinmotion. And the reason you'd want to do that is designers are very interested to see how their designs would look inside a game engine with real-time rendering, as well as real-time physics, as well as real-time lighting, real-time interactivity. And Revit,
I like that, real-time interactivity. That's a cool, because we just finished a project where I've done tons of collaboration with Enscape, and I've become really good friends with Moritz Luck from meeting him at Digital Built Week. And him and I meet regularly now, where he built this really cool company called Enscape from a gaming engine. And I've heard all his stories of how he turned that and sold it. And now he's figuring out what is the next platform. And I love that real-time interactive beyond visualization, because how do we actually take this stuff to where it's amazing what you can do now with showcasing lighting, but how do you know how much power they use and the P&Ls and all the real data around that? Where at the beginning, you talked about how pulling the stuff out into Excel, we have to be able to use tools like that, because that's quite frankly how the mainframe world works.
That's right. Yeah, you said it. Yeah. So I think Enscape's a great example. That is also a great gold standard visualization tool for Revit. What those do is you do hit a hard wall, which is, what do I do next? I could see my project. I can see real-time rendering. I could see real-time lighting. But what if I want more? And the class I'm going to teach is, how do you take it to that next level? How do you make it interactive? How could you, for example, turn on a light or turn off a light? So in Enscape and Twinmotion right now with the visualization tools, there's no real way to turn off a light. And you're right. Like, well, That's just one example of interactivity.
I love that part because I've tried to take to the next level. It's like, okay, as a guy that owns a window and door company, I want to show this door open and closed. And that should be easy until you actually do it. Wow, we had to do we had a whole team doing crazy amount of stuff to just show that. And then the problem is there are different models, right? And then, so that's all these conversations around, I love your terminology around interactive. It's interactivity around different platforms to actually at a project level, move these projects forward. Cause that's at the end of the day, we're all trying to do, right? Is take these designs and get them into execution. But I think there's a long way to go of just maybe we got to back up a few steps. I just had just finished a podcast the other day with my buddy, Mike Kirshner, who has been in lighting his whole career. And Mike Kirshner is a really cool story of like doing films, but then understanding didn't want to do that, but loved lighting. And he's coming from a very different, coming from a software about procurement and taking all these Art of Construction master facilitators of saying, how do you really put it all together? And that's that beyond visualization that I couldn't agree more with you.
And here's what's exciting to close the loop on why I think it's important. We talked about Dynamo and Grasshopper. Dynamo and Grasshopper are visual programming languages. If you're using, for example, the Unreal Game Engine, which you can take your twin motion visualizations into and make that interactivity, the logic that you use to set that up is also visual programming. It's something that's called blueprint and flow. So it's a bunch of boxes and wires. So if you can, if you could get used to using these Grasshopper, Dynamo, computational design tools and your visualization tools, Unreal, Enscape, it's not a far stretch. You have laid a great foundation to then use a full-fledged AAA game engine like Unreal and then put in the interactivity, the animations, the turning on and off the lights, the measuring, the heads-up displays with, like you said, maybe I walk into a room and I want to know how much with a heads up display, volume there is or whatever. But it's this interactivity that's done and you've laid the foundation already for it with the tools that are already out there. And so that's what the class is going to focus on. It's like, no, it's not a far stretch. This is what we need to do because you already have the foundation on these two areas.
Marcel, that gets me so jazzed because these are the conversations to say it is close, but it takes people like you and I in these platforms to come together, right? And that's what's really key to this whole thing. The question we always ask as we work on closing this thing out, we'll make sure to put links in the show notes, and hopefully this inspires people to come be part of Digital Built Week. From people like you that have been at it from the very beginning, people like me, this is my third time, and hopefully a bunch of people who are new, different platforms all coming together as we're really trying to figure out how to straddle this digital and physical world to come together. What is your take what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
I think it's going to, so I mentioned back in 2013, I saw computational design. I saw real-time rendering and game engine technology. Now I see the next step is the crystal ball in the future is artificial intelligence, the integration of artificial intelligence. That's what I see. I can give you some simple examples, but the idea is it's kind of integrated with our workflows with computational design and BIM and our everyday workflow, maybe going from the fabrication, maybe the shop all the way out to the field. It could be something as simple as a text prompt or a voice, like how many structural beams are in my model or how far should this go from this corner or how many studs are these and or where should they be placed? You know, this could be done kind of at any phase. And this AI technology that we have kind of seen glimpses of and that people are either love or hate or both. I see this as just going to be part of our industry. And I could see a lot of benefits just on every level across AEC.
I love it, man. And what is that one thing you want to leave our builders to think about to go out and crush it and grow their business?
I think go out and crush the business. Yeah. I think being able to talk, you know what I think it is to have those conversations with all the team players from the owner to the architect to the structural engineer to all the system engineers, I'm trying to forget everyone, to the general contractors, to the subcontractors, to the facilities managers. If there's a way you could bring those together by talking in a common language that everyone uses, whether it's technology or whether it's the universal language of pronoia, which is not, it's opposite of paranoia. Like pronoia is like, you're thinking everyone is out to help you. You can breed that kind of culture across your office, across the entire project, and then everyone's willing to help and share and talk. You'll get the meeting invites, you'll have fun, and it'll just be an exciting time and fun place to work.
Oh man, I love that. Thank you, Marcelo, so much for coming and share your story. I'm super excited to meet you in person at Digital Built Week and continue to collaborate and have as much fun as possible.
All right. Thank you for having me on, Nick.
Everyone benefits from automation, but the question is how, and we're out to figure that out on every podcast. And that's where I challenge myself and others to throw myself out there and say, what does ChatGPT say? And I'll listen to that back, because when you read it for the first time, I always say about seven times for the first time. And Marcel did a great job of recognizing that, but then putting his touch on that, right? And that's this, we're all trying to figure out what we can augment and automate, but where do we need to put that personal touch onto that? And we have to figure out how to make it easy, because a lot of this stuff, when you talk to an expert, they make it sound like it's easy, but the people who are not experts, it is not that easy, right? And this whole, what you have to find just in time. One of my big takeaways is this undertone of this Revit API is critical to understand, because this, that whole world is not going away, but how do we jump on that train? And we all have to figure out scripts, and we need to know them, because things change and people move and things go, but you have to really understand that source, that origin source of the data, because stuff change, right? But I think that's a big part why a lot of the people, I raise my hand and say, that's where we get fearful of jumping into new things, right? Because we may have, and then it burned us, and then you didn't understand the script. And then you're like, well, I don't want to read that script again. And you have to figure out how to move that stuff around, right? And he talked about game engine technologies, and you can go back and listen to Moritz Luck's story about figuring out how he founded Enscape and how he had all these different gaming engine things before that. And then he talked about Twin Motion that I'm going to check out. And I leave you with this. He talked about these two new things called Blueprint and Flow. And Marcelo discussed that. And I would say, when I hear blueprint and flow, I probably think about those words a little bit differently as a builder than the people who are doing architect and engineer of those different words. And words do matter, because you have to put yourself in different boots, right? The boots on the ground and the programmer are kind of two different worlds, but the builder has to connect them. And that's what he talked about. It's just so exciting, because it's simplified if you have a mindset. Think about that, tribe. Be a master facilitator to say everybody is out there to help. Because let's be honest, we usually think the opposite. Crush it out there, tribe.